Our next speaker, Jan, is a structural biologist. He has more than 14 years of experience in structural biology and a PhD in biochemistry from the University of Köln. Why structural biology? Well, it's the most concrete way to look at the mechanisms of how living things actually work. The talk, How Machine Learning Has Changed Structural Biology Forever, or Not. Let's hear a warm welcome for Jan.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm quite amazed how many people showed up, so thanks for that already. I hope I can present you something which is interesting to all of you. And I tried to adjust this talk so that you can learn something if you are a biologist, even if you're a structural biologist. I hope you learn something. But even if you have no idea about structural biology, proteins, or all of these kind of things, I hope that I break it down so much that you can actually learn at the end what AlphaFold does, how important structural biology is, and why I'm dealing with these topics for years now, and I'm still pretty amazed about it. So the talk goes about AlphaFold, and let me go back a little bit, a couple of years. It was 2001 when the winner of the 13th CASP Award was announced. And the CASP Award is a particular award in the field of structural protein prediction. And I come to that, what that means. What is actual structural protein and what is structural protein prediction? We come to that a little bit later. But there is a test, there is a kind of championship in this field, and this is called CASP. And every 2 years, people submitting their best predictions, whatever they are, their best guesses, to this kind of championship, and then at the end, these guesses were compared with the real solution, and then the winner is cured. And at this particular case in 2001, it was quite an amazing thing because for the first time, a company actually entered this field, and this company was Google, and especially it was Google DeepMind. And here we have a graph which is very easy. You see, you can just see here on the bottom is how complicated the predictions are, so you have to give multiple predictions, and here on the top, how good you are in terms of how well you actually guessed what the right answer is. And these are all the other contestants, and the blue line here, and I think that's easy to see, they're just above all of the others. So they actually were, for the first time they showed up on this contest, and they obliterated all the other contestants, which was a little bit of a shock for the scientific community because we are doing this stuff for years. I mean, this thing is CASP 13, so it's 25 years old, so we all did it for years, and they just waltzed in and took us all by surprise. Then the second thing, which I was actually, I mean, you shouldn't self-reference, but I do it here once only. I was actually pretty wary that this is now a company doing science, but there was actually no mention that they publish what they actually found. And science means you do something, you find something, and you share it with all the others. This is what science is all about. And in 2018, when they came out, they said, well, nothing came out, and it took them more than 2 years in 2020 to actually publish a paper how they potentially did it. It was a little bit vague, and nobody really knew. And in 2020, there was already the next CASP, which was the CASP 14, and they again entered this time with a new machine learning algorithm. And you don't really need to understand this graph, but what you can see, again, is these are all the other CASPs, so this is easy targets, difficult targets, and moderately different guesses, so riddles. You can see an easy riddle, riddle, difficult riddle, and how good are all these people solving that. And the black line, more or less, is what Google did. So they solved all the riddles perfectly from the get-go. And this was also very amazing. And this broke, and to see how good they are, you have this a little bit difficult graph, but it brings the point over, I guess. Here on the bottom one, you see all the contestants. So 400 whatever groups or algorithms which submitted their guesses to this CASP championship. And on the left side here, this is AlphaFold, and you see it's just way above all the others. And just for those of you who are a little bit in the field, the second one, this one here, sorry, let me get my pointer going. This one here, this is the Baker Lab. Those of you who are in the field know they are from the Institute for Protein Design and University of Washington. They were the leader of the field for ages, and they were actually also pretty much abolished. So this was major news in at least science news outlets. So some people said, well, this problem is now solved. Nature published that DeepMind's AI make a giant leap in solving protein structures. It was even going to the New York Times, which say that the AI has now solved the protein structure problem, which we were working for 50 years, 25 years we tried in this kind of test, but before that we already tried. And the Spiegel, which is a German news outlet, so to say, if you want to say that, they actually asked, should this win a machine, the Nobel Prize, this machine? Not sure if they actually ever read the rules for the Nobel Prize, but nevertheless. And it also, again, the German one, it's saying about anyone can now fold proteins, and I will show you that this is true. Everyone here in your field, can in this room, can at the end of this talk fold a protein. I'm not sure if you can do anything with it, but at least you are able to do it. And then the Spiegel, again, is always good for some new stuff. They say that 2020 will be the year which will be known for future generations as the year where machines began to overtake us in research. This is, of course, a bleak outlook for me because I'm a researcher. That's my bread and butter job. And if now an AI can do that better, I'm not sure if I have a job next year. And this was not only the Spiegel, I have to admit, also the Guardian said, are we witnessing the dawn of post-theory science? So this is quite a bit of rockers for just a scientific paper in Nature. Normally you don't hear that in the name, in the main newspapers. So let's now have a look. Why is it so dramatic? What is the big deal about AlphaFold? What is the big deal about structural biology in general? And how can we understand what's happening here? So to understand this, we first have to step a couple of steps back. So I now take you through a quick tour during biochemistry studies. So you now start as an undergrad in our research lab here, and we first have to discuss what are actually proteins. And I started this by asking ChatGPT to draw a more or less accurate picture of my office, and this is how it more or less looked like. It is some quite similar to a nerd office, I would say, or to a hacker office, which is because we have computers and we have quite a bit of coffee. We also use quite a bit of energy drinks. But when you look now at the ingredients, there are actually nearly no proteins in there. So the protein here is 0.1 gram, and actually in your Club Mart, there's actually no protein in it. But in the pizza, it's always a good check. This is now a pizza for our American friends, because I never tasted this. It's from Walmart. So I have no idea if it tastes very well, but it has a lot of protein. 56% of your daily average usage, 78 grams of protein. So, and we can already see here that proteins are one of the four major macromolecules in your body. So it's normally proteins, nucleic acids, sugars, and fats or lipids. But we don't need the other three, we only talk about proteins. So just this one. So what are proteins in principle? So proteins, you all know that we are coming from cells, and if we now take it a little bit simpler, we can say our cell is more or less like a house, and every cell in your body is like one room of your house that we could imagine. And the proteins in this allergy would be then all the tools which you have in your room. Right, in your kitchen, you have all these kitchen utilities, and meaning all these would be different proteins. And proteins in your cell are actually what's actually doing stuff. So if you smell your neighbor because he has hopefully followed the 6-to-1 rule, that's a protein which detects the smell. Then it's connected to your brain, so that's the protein which actually fires this whatever electric signal to your brain. If you eat the pizza outside, then there's a protein which actually cuts down this protein, this pizza, into some kind of small molecules which you can actually use. So proteins are the building blocks of your body and are those who are actually doing the work. Yeah, they are those which actually do stuff, measure stuff, signal stuff, whatever. Whatever you can think of, it's normally a protein, with very rare exceptions, which we have to ignore here. So obviously, just by looking at this image, we can already see what these kind of proteins are doing. So this here is probably a microwave. This is probably digesting some pizza. And this is cooking whatever, doing some new stuff. But in general, if you really want to understand what they really need to do, we have to normally look very closely. And to make this point a little bit clearer, I show you here three proteins, yeah, in a very low resolution, meaning we look from relatively far away, we can't really see what's going on. So we see here three different stuff, and just by looking at that, and this we could do for years already, just by looking at these, let's say, low resolution images, we can say, well, there's something here on the top, This might be a motor domain. Yeah, for those of you who are structural biologists, ATPase domain potentially. Yeah, nobody knows. Then there's some long stuff which we don't know what it's doing. So probably it's a linker. Let's call it a linker. And then at the bottom we have an effector domain, something which is doing something. Yeah, it's somehow driven by this motor, and then it might spin or whatever it does. And we can just by this very rough estimation, we can say, well, this is probably a protein which do some mixing or blending action. And we can all agree. But if we now go very closely and really want to go into the fine, that's what structural biology is normally about, going to really and looking very, very closely. And by very closely, I mean we go from this 8 angstrom to this, let's say, 2 angstrom resolution, yeah? And an angstrom is just how well you can define pines from a fart. We see that in a minute. Then you see that this guy over here, this is probably a blender, which you probably all have in your kitchen household. And this is very good for making smoothies. Yeah, so this is very nice. The other one, it's also a blender, but it's a scientific equipment. Yeah, from Pro Scientific, I just name the names because they're images. I don't care. I have never used any of those. Yeah. This is actually doing for making cannabinoid oils. So you probably don't want to mix them up. Yeah, if you make your smoothie for your kid, don't use the wrong blender because it probably makes you the wrong product. And the last one, yeah, it's obviously something which makes mortars and glues, and you shouldn't eat it at all. Yeah, the other one we can discuss if you should or not. So you see, it's very important to look in details and not only have an overview, but look very finely what is actually happening. So what we learn already, if we know the structure, so if we have it in a very detailed structure, we often, and this often is now because I'm a biologist, and in biology, never, ever, everything is 100% true, is always often or mostly. But for you, you can say we can always infer the function of the protein. Yeah? And this is one of the relationships, you can say, paradigm of structure biology. Structure actually leads to function. So if you have a structure in a protein, so if you have a blender, it will blend. If you have a cooking pot, it will cook. And if you have a microwave, it will heat up stuff. That's the idea of structure leads to function. And as soon as we know the structure, we can actually derive the function. So, but proteins obviously are not blenders. They are not made of electronics. So we have to think a little bit of chemistry. And this is the most chemical stuff we see today, so don't be afraid. This is an amino acid, which builds up our proteins. And the only thing I want to tell you here, proteins are multimers, so you are all built up of these parts of things. The blue one always connects to the red one, and then another one, like a chain of multiple little things. And the only difference here is where there is an R standing here. So this is the so-called side chain, and we have 21 of them. That's the natural side chains. And you have seen them now, and you see all these little wiggly arms here go down here. And you can forget about them. We don't need them for this talk, but at least I want to show you how they look in principle. For this talk, we can just simplify it down a little bit and say we have only 6 amino acids, and they look suspiciously like the pearls from my daughter's playroom. But however, so I just use these 6 amino acids, and if we use the 6 amino acids and make proteins out of them, we can make different versions. So this, for example, is one protein of different lengths of amino acids in a different organization, and this might be, for example, your protein which is cleaving your pizza in your stomach. And there's a second protein, and this might be, for example, electric conductor in your brain. So this tells your brain if the pizza was nice or not. And the important part is now, the difference is not the amount of pearls in this particular case, the difference is the ordering of the pearls in this orientation. So there's first in violet, then in yellow, and so on. This is also violet, yellow, but then it changes. And these kind of primary sequence, as we call it, or primary structure, then leads to different forms. So this protein string will automatically fold itself up into this kind of structure. And this, for example, is now an alpha helix. It's a helix, which we call alpha helix, because we are fancy. And the second one here, like this one, this forms something else. This forms this sheet. And this we would call the beta sheet. This is also a very typical component of our proteins. And what we know by this is it depends not so much, it depends about how you order your pearls on your string, what kind of structure you get, and we already know that structure defines function. So proteins are strings of pearls. We have 20 different ones, or 21 different types of pearls, and they form complicated knots, and they are specific for this particular pearl. So whenever you have this chain, it always will link to that. So this is the easy introduction. Now we go a little bit more into what it really looks like, because if we want to look at AlphaFold and what it produces, we have to at least have an idea how protein really looks like. So this is just our simple one, and in structural biology, we normally like to show this as a cartoon structure, as we call it. It's not very cartoonish, but it just simplifies how we look at those. So this is a cartoon of what we've seen below. And we can now have a look at this cartoon in various different ways. And I just want to show you that this, because this you see sometimes in the news, is not really what is a protein. So this is now a cartoon where we see the side chains. So here we can also distinguish which pearl color we have at which position. Yeah, you probably remember some of those you have seen in this big slide. We can also have a look at the whole atoms. So here we see all the atoms. So here we have now get rid of this cartoonish helix stuff and see now at every edge of these borders, we see an atom. And the colors actually tells me which atoms they are. Blues for nitrogen, red is for oxygen, and this is a sulfur, and the rest is carbon, if you are interested. If not, you can forget it. But this is, of course, also not the same as the real picture, because atoms have masses. And if we now look at the atoms and masses, we see this is how it would be a more appropriate depiction of this little protein fragment. Yeah? So this is how it looks like. So you see, you can't really see a lot of things anymore because it's all hidden behind it. Yeah? And the last thing which I want to show you is you can also have a look at the surface. So this is how it would look like if you could look at it, yeah, if you're an Ant-Man or whatever, and go very deep, and then you can run around on this little protein stuff. But most of the times we actually look at this because this is the one which we see the general structure, that it's in helix, that it's turning around. And we can only show those residues which are interested to us. Interestingly, or sadly, this is not the real picture still, because this is just a very tiny fragment of a protein. So if we now have a look at a real program, so this one is just this one, and this structure which a colleague of mine actually solved experimentally. And if we just have a look, so this is where we started. So and this is the whole protein now. So this is now the first protein you probably see, hopefully, or not. Probably. This is one protein here, and you see it's all these little helices around, and then we have these beta sheets here, which is the general overview of how these kind of things look. And if you're now an experienced structure biologist, just by the look at this crystal structure, or at this structure, you could say, well, this looks like a blender. Doesn't, but just leave it as it is. What you can also see here, there's a second part, there's a second molecule here, which is depicted in a different way, but it's also a protein. And what you can then learn, if you look very closely, you see that for whatever reason, and I don't want to go into detail, but just that you have an idea, we see that these proteins, this is the left one, which is our big domain, and this is the smaller ones, that it somehow recognizes this. So there are some interactions between amino acids. And I don't go into detail how they are working, because you need a little bit more of biochemistry to understand that, I guess. But you can appreciate some amino acids. They like each other, and they like to stick together. And that's the way how you can, for example, make complexes and how proteins are folded. Okay. So this now we have, so we know sequence leads to structure. And we know that structure defines function. And this is now the famous sequence structure function relationship in structural biology, which leads all the efforts which we are doing. And this is also what AlphaFold uses, because he says he knows the sequence defines the structure, and then you should be able to actually define what the function of the protein is. So how useful is it? So now I told you what protein structures are. At least I hope you have an idea. So how useful is structural biology? Why should we care? Yeah. And the thing is, if you do structural biology, you actually understand the life in a very particular and very, very defined way. So this is a picture from David Gotzel. He's a structural biologist. I was nearly saying former, but I don't think that's fair. He's a structural biologist who is now doing all these nice, very nice water-painted images, and they are accurate in that regard, that he really uses structural biology information to make up these pictures. So what you see here on the left is a cell which are connected to an intricate network of collagens, which are just by chance my research interest, to this outer membrane here. So this is skin, this is a huge collagen fiber here, and we learned so much from here. I can name you most of the proteins which are going in here, and we know all the structures just because we did structural biology. And the important part, and we had this already, for example, is that just because we did structural biology, we actually know that collagens, and that are those proteins which make up your bone, which make up your skin, and which makes up your jelly if you're not a vegan, all these kind of things, they are all stuck collagens, and they have a very particular form, which is look like this, and it just goes shortly over. You see this is triple helix. It looks a little bit like a DNA, but it's triplicated. It's a little bit more complicated. And interesting enough, to form these kind of collagens, this triple helix, you need a helper, like you would need if you make ropes. If you make a rope, you also intertwine at least three or four, whatever, of different little ropes. And here you need the same helper, you need a helper here to make this rope. And this is actually a protein I just showed you a minute ago. Yeah? So this protein sits on the side of the collagen and helps collagen to form. And these kind of relationship we only understand if we do structural biology, if we really look at how the atoms are orientated and what the atoms are doing with this particular protein. So it helps us to understand basic physiology. And this is actually my main driving force, because I'm really curious about how life is actually working. But it has also some approach, some real life, let's say, usage. So understanding diseases is a second big thing, and it of course is linked to understanding the basic physiology. I'm not sure if you all know what this one is. We have all experienced it for years now. This is the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, and all these little parts here on the top are the spike proteins. We have all heard so much in all these little podcasts. And the spike proteins, of course, immediately crystallized back in the day, sorry, structurally solved back in the day, and only by that we could actually understand what all these mutations you have probably heard actually are doing. Yeah? And this is, again, this little nice depiction of David Gotzel about it. This is the coronavirus in a more artsy depiction, and how it actually infects a cell in hopefully not in your body. So that's hype. And just to see, because viewing is understanding. So this is an image which I just show you a very, very short part of it. So this is all based on structural biology. We have the spike proteins. The spike proteins are processed. I haven't shown you that. Then they elongate parts of their amino sequence. You see this alpha helices here down, which I've shown you, yeah? And then it actually fuses up. It goes open, and then actually your virus, which is here on the top, fuses with your body cell, and then it excretes all its content into your body cell and infects your body cell. If you want to see this movie in full length, you find it here at the animation lab at the Utah University. It's actually a very nice movie and explains very well how this works. I show you the QR code at the end again, so don't panic. So how do we determine this kind of structure? So we already know it is hopefully important, you see that, and we need to know them. And the thing is, they are very, very, very tiny. Yeah? So they are 1 billionth. So this link from one atom to another one is 1 angstrom, which is 0.1 nanometers. So it's 0.1 of a billionth of a meter. So it's quite small. And the problem with that is we cannot really look with a microscope. If we use the best microscope, so to say, which is an electron microscope, then we have these kind of pictures. This is, luckily, the same picture as we see here. We have here collagen again, and I just use collagen because, you know, because I work on them. You can use any protein for that. So this is the collagen here. This one again, on an EM grid. And then this little white bulbs is actually our protein here, which is called HSP47, and this would fit there. So you don't see much. You see a couple of pictures, so this is not enough. So a microscope is not going to do it. Those of you who are experts, they say cryo-EM and so on. Yeah, I get it. We can talk about that. But this is now a traditional microscope, and it doesn't work for that. So you have three different experimental methods to actually determine protein structures. So one is so-called cryo-EM, one is bio-NMR, and one is protein crystallography. And I do protein crystallography most of my days. Sometimes I do a little bit of cryo-EM. But if you look how many of the structures were actually solved up to now, you see that most structures we know up to now are actually solved by protein crystallography. This will change in the future. Cryo-EM is on the uprise, But let's ignore that. We just have time to look at one of these methods, and it's obvious which one we take. It's crystallography. And also there, I will be very shortly. It's not the topic of the talk, but at least I want to convey how much work it is to get these crystal structures so that you actually appreciate how easy it is now with AlphaFold and how much this might change all the stuff. So if you want to crystallize a protein, yeah, and meaning crystallization, sorry, this means getting the structure at the end. Yeah, so this crystallography is just in the middle. So you first have to identify which one you want to take. So let's say we take the spike protein. So first of all, you have to isolate the spike protein from the virus because you cannot use the virus completely for various reasons. You have to isolate the spike protein on its own, which means cloning. And here's one of my colleagues actually doing some fancy cloning technique. It's just blue color. But this is how you do it. Then you have to purify the protein. Yeah. And if you're lucky enough, then you mix your purified protein with thousands, and I mean really thousands of different chemical cocktails. We have robots for that, we're pipetting a lot of stuff, and you have lots of different trays of combinations. And if you're lucky in one of these 5,000 combinations, you get a protein crystal. And this protein crystal is actually what you think about it. I mean, it's a little bit complicated to explain, but in principle, it's a crystal. It looks like a salt crystal. It's a crystal. It looks like more or less like this if it's a beautiful one, so you see it immediately. It's a crystal, like a diamond. Yeah, and then you have to pick it because it's tiny. It's so small you can only look at them under a microscope normally. So you pick them, and then you go to a fancy synchrotron source, for example. So this is the SLS in Villingen, but we have one here in Hamburg, the Peter III ring at the EMBL, which we also go regularly. So, and there you actually shine X-rays on them. And this is me doing it in our home source. It's not that big as this one, but it, yeah, more or less does the job. So then you shine X-rays on them, and then you get this very nice pattern. So you don't even see the protein. It's not like microscopy that you enlarge your protein. You see a diffraction pattern. And this is this one. It looks like this. And then you have to back calculate. There's some magic going into that as well, which I won't explain today. And then you have these kind of electron density. So where are all your electrons? And then you can sit in the middle of your electrons, you can put some proteins. And I did this morning a little bit for you. So at some point, I will find some proteins and will put some protein structure in it. So here we start with building up the model. And this is what we have seen more or less before, yeah, just this wireframe model of where atoms are connected and where they are sitting. So how long does it take? So it is, of course, an experiment, so you never know. But target selection and cloning probably take days. Protein purification depends how good the protein is to purify, weeks to months. Crystallization can actually sometimes never work, so it might be that you even after years have never found a crystal, but it takes at least weeks to months. While the collection is easy, it takes hours or minutes or seconds in our days, but you have to go there, and so let's say hours. And then you have the data, and then you have to build it up, and this takes again weeks. So in all of those, we have a half a year before you have a single protein crystal structure. And a typical PhD in our research group takes 3 years. So if you're lucky, you get 5 to 6 crystal structures. If you're unlucky, you get none. Yeah? So this is a way of have to think of it. So it's quite a big way. So and now AlphaFold tells you, well, you can just skip all this and go to the back in just a couple of hours. And this is the difference. We go from years to hours. And this is, of course, amazing if this would be true. And to some regard, it is. So how does AlphaFold cut all of this stuff? So first of all, we have to think what information can AlphaFold use. And for that, we have to go a couple of steps back to protein evolution. So if you look about proteins, of course, we are now looking again at collagens, for example, because, you know. So collagens are happening in all proteins, in all animals which have bones. And in these animals, you see, they have all some kind of bones, but the sharks. So the sharks are out of the picture. Yeah, unfortunately for them. Well, they have some collagens, but not the ones I'm interested in. So if you have collagens in all of these, that means you have all proteins, you should have the same proteins on all of them, which are helping to fold the collagen. Yeah, the ones which we just had, this little one which helps the triple helix of collagen to form, they all have it. But as they are very old, so the one which are down here, the predecessor animal which was living here, which all of them are descendants from, this animal also has a protein which folds collagen. And now, over the time, this protein has changed, and this is called mutation. And this is how evolution works. And that means you have a version of this protein in all these animals, but they are all slightly different. And I can just show you an image, and it's just about the colors. So ignore what the letters are, the amino acids, but it's just about the colors. Yeah, I showed you here that we have the dog around here, the cat, somewhere is the chicken. Here are all the amphibians, and we have the fish down here. And you see most of the proteins, most of the sites are the same. So for example, this K, whatever that means, is more or less everywhere, once here. But you sometimes see positions where you have mutations, so where the protein has changed in other species. Okay? So, and how is it, and what can we learn from that? And for that, we can have a look here. So what we have already known is that proteins interact. I showed you that in the ones where the collagen was recognized by our helping protein. There was this little dashed line that I told you some amino acids just like to talk to each other. And this is what I depicted here. So let's say this is our protein. It's a very short protein, but we can live with that. And to form this knot, there is one particular interaction here in the middle. So there's a blue arrow which is recognized versus orange, whatever it is. Yeah? And it links this loop together. So is this now, if this is for whatever reason changing in evolution, for example, if this one gets now the orange one, then the other side has to change as well. Otherwise, you don't get this interaction. And if you don't get this interaction, the whole protein will fall apart, and you don't have the same structure anymore. Yeah? So that means those parts which are interacting with each other, like this one, they should co-evolve. So if one side is changed in an animal, the other side has to change as well. Otherwise, it's not functional. If both changing whatever they want, willy-vanilly, like here, this one changes to something, and I don't have another one in this example, then they are not doing anything particularly important. But this is the thing to do. And what we now can do for, we can now have a look at our previous alignment with all of different stuff and have a look which of these changes, and if this changes, which other side changes. And then we know that these two are probably in close combination to each other. And it's not only these two, we have lots of combinations how they can interact. It's not only that we have just two interactions, yeah? So this is just simplified. So that's the first thing which we can see. This is an old idea, actually. It's not from AlphaFold or DeepMind, but this co-evolving over evolution, it's an old idea. And then we need to understand the second thing. So dealing with three-dimensional structures is difficult because you can rotate them and you can move them around and then everything is different. So what AlphaFold normally uses, and it was also invented before they used it, is they don't use a three-dimensional representation, which I don't use here either, but which I used before. They use a two-dimensional representation, and this looks like this. So what they do, they plot the amino acid here on the top and on the left side, and then in these little boxes, you just enter how close are these amino acids to each other. So obviously, the blue one to the blue one is pretty close because it's the same. Yeah? And then the next one, so the blue one to this blue one here, they're also pretty close because they're connected by the main chain. It's also very clear that's nothing new. So this middle line is always dark and there's always interactions. But it gets interesting if we look, for example, for this interaction. So this part, this blue box and this green star, they are pretty far away on their primary sequence. Yeah? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 amino acids away, but they are close in three-dimensional space. And that's why we put a dark spot over there. Oops, sorry, dark spot over here. And the same is true for this blue one and the orange one. They are also 1, 2, 3, 4 apart, but they are pretty close in three-dimensional space, either in my three-dimensional space, which is only 2D. And then you get the same over here. And obviously, as this is centrosymmetric, you have the same side on the other side. So they are always looking the same. So and these we also need to understand. So that is pretty simple. That's an easy way to represent a three-dimensional structure, a 3D protein, in this two-dimensional table. And this is how it looks in real. So this is a protein we have now looked multiple times on. This is, again, this collagen folding protein. And this is how this two-dimensional assay would look like. So in the middle, you see, of course, the same. And then you see some interactions somewhere. And this is how it looks. OK, so this is information AlphaFold can both use. And this is just what AlphaFold always shows it in black and white. So I just switched it here to a black and white version. So and the last one is, if you use about machine learning, and I think we have heard it in many, many talks over this conference already. If you use machine learning, we need data to train our machine with. And what data can we use? And there, AlphaFold could, for example, could luckily use the combined knowledge of the structural biology community, which up to date goes up to 215,000 experimentally determined protein structures. So you can just add, this is 215,000 years of PhD labor, at least, PhD student labor, at least, which go into this database, yeah? Probably more. So you can all access them in the PDB database. The protein data bank is now 50 years old, and we have this 215,000. And you see it was pretty shallow at the beginning, but actually it rises experimentally over, exponentially over the time. So this is what they could use. And what you have in this database in a very nice and very neat way, you have the sequence, and you have how it should look like. And this is exactly what AlphaFold wanted to learn by machine learning. So they had very, very good data set. And they never said anything else. So they are very grateful for this database. And this is just one entry, how it looks like. You see the structure, then you see the sequence somewhere, and all the stuff in there. So just to see, and these are 215,000 of these entries. Yeah. So it's a very, it's a database actually curated by structural biologists themselves. Okay. So now let's have a look at AlphaFold itself. So this is from the paper from 2001, which is the AlphaFold version, which dealt with, which was the latest one. And I'm not a machine learning expert anyway, so some of you probably understand this better than me, but I'll try to guide you through as best as I can. And I'm happy to get corrections at the end if there's anything to say about it. So the first thing is here on the left side. We first do the data gathering. So you put some input sequence in, and then you look for this multiple sequence alignment. That's exactly what I told you. We looked through all the species. Do we have similar proteins so that we can learn something about these co-evolving proteins? The second thing which they do is they make this two-dimensional plots, yeah, which they don't know where the positions are yet, but they want to find it out. And the last one, which I also used, but it's not necessary, so we mostly ignore it for this talk, they look for templates. So they look for proteins which are already solved, but probably looks the same or similar. But this is, you can get rid of it. You don't need it, so let's ignore it. So first thing is gathering the data. So I, again, use a dog protein because I work with dogs, unfortunately, or not unfortunately, but it just happened to be that case. So what you do, you use a protein and you put it into these databases, and these databases are huge. So at least this one has 2.5 billion entries of proteins, and we don't even know where they're coming from. So they're just from soil samples, and you just sequence them through, and there are some species, some soil bacteria just express proteins, and we just have a look at those proteins. It's a huge database of sometimes we know what it is, sometimes it's just randomly protein sequence with just lying around everywhere. Yeah? And the same is true for other data. So we have a couple of billion databases, and we just a huge, we get a huge multiple sequence alignment, and this is how it then looks if you really do it. So on the top ones are the very good ones here. And on the bottom one you get less good ones. This is a quality score from blue to red. And you get even some where only parts of them align, so you just have fragments, but it's still helpful. So it's not always the same protein, it's just looks so similar that it probably has the same fold. And the second thing is searching for the templates. So I did this here for the protein we had a look at all the time. So these are now all proteins I could look in the protein database, which rather look similar, if you can see that. Yeah, they look, so these can all be used by AlphaFold to guide, so it should look roughly like this. Yeah, that's the templates. And we make this two-dimensional contact maps out of that, and then we have this part done as well. Yeah, so we have our multiple sequence alignment, our MSA. We have our dist protein, our amino acid distance plots, which is this two-dimensional representation of our three-dimensional structure. And then we actually go into two neuronal networks. The first is called the EvoFormer, which has 48 blocks, and the second one is the structure model with it 8 blocks. And the first one is what they try in this EvoFormer is actually to get all the information they can from the multiple sequence alignments and from the templates to get this pair representation, so the distances between all the amino acids, as good as possible. So that's the idea. Try to predict which amino acids are how close to each other. And then the last one is doing the folding, and I don't want to talk so much about the folding. So how does it work? So here we have our multiple sequence alignment. It gets into representation, and we get our distance block. And the first thing they do, they analyze all the sequences and all this co-evolution variation based with an bias towards what they believe is already the right distances between all the amino acids. And they know that either by just guessing, which is just randomly guessing, like diffusion model more or less, or if they have templates, they use the templates to guide the first initial values for these parts. Yeah? So this is the first part. So this is first the multiple sequence alignment, which guides the re-evaluation of this multiple sequence alignment representation. And the second part is then, after they extracted all the information from the multiple sequence alignment, they update now their pair representation, so the distances between all the amino acids, and try to get a better destination of that. So this is all pretty standard, and what they did then is actually a little bit nice, because they did then a triangle equality check. And let me shortly explain that to that. If you look at a three-dimensional structure, like this one, and you have defined that these lengths here, for example, where is the animation? Yeah. So let's say this one here, from 4 to 1, you have found this is a very good, a very, very close connection. And you see that also in this structure now. Then you have also determined that 3 to 1, which is this one, no, sorry, 4, this is all messed up a little bit with the numbers. So this is 1 to 5, and this is 1 to 4. So these two you know, which are, or you believe they are very close to each other. Now that's what you guess. And then you immediately know that the next one, which is between 4 and 5, needs to be also in some of close proximity. Because the triangle needs to be fulfilled with 180 degrees in all corners, and this is triangle equality. So whenever you change this one, you have to change this one, and if you change both of them, you have to change this one as well. Now this is built into the second tower of the EVO former. And what they're doing by this is to teach the neural network that it works in a three-dimensional space. Because otherwise, it would just change all of those independently, and it wouldn't fit up to make a three-dimensional model later on. Now, that is the triangle equality check which they build up in there. And this they do now 48 times. And at the end, they get a pair representation out, and a single which defines the distances between all amino acids. Yeah, and they get the first, they get the sequence, and then they put it into a structure model. And I don't want to explain the structural model too much, because first, time reason, and second, it is interesting, but it's not as nice to explain how it works. What they're doing, they're modeling their restraints, so all these pair restraints they got, like a protein gas, and we can have a look how this looks like if we see this modeling. So this is now AlphaFold modeling a protein. Normally, you don't see that. This is from their homepage, from DeepMind, and you see it forms it up and gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it samples all these things, and at the end, it decides that, come on, this one now is the final structure. Nearly. 48 blocks. So this is the final structure. Okay. So this is very, very nice, and what they did really, really, really well as well is that they embedded into the neural network also an error estimation. So they're not only giving you this is our solution, they also tell you how good is the solution. And they do this with this color code, so it's called the predicted local distance, local PLDDT. Predicted local distance, I now miss the word, PLDDT is the right abbreviation. And if it's blue, for you, then it's a good prediction, and if it's red, it's a bad prediction. And that's the way it is. So here we see again a picture, and it's colored exactly in the same way. So the bottom one is very blue, so this is very, very nicely defined, says AlphaFold. And then we see this loop here, which, as a structural biologist, I can tell you this is bullshit. And I see that immediately, but by the color, AlphaFold knows it as well. So it doesn't say it's good. They say it's nobody knows what it is. So this is the red one, okay? And it gives you also this PAE blocks, which are similar to what we have already looked. So what you can tell here, if you look at two positions, let's say this one and this one, it tells you 300 to 250 how well it believes that these two are to each other, are positioned to each other. That's the predicted alignment error. So it says this one is pretty nice, but if you compare this one to this one, so that 300 to whatever 600, it tells you, well, I'm not sure if this is really oriented very well. So it gives you this local accuracy in this color code. Bluetooth red, and in this green color, as I call it here, it tells you how sure it is about the distant colors, the distant itself. And if you now look, if you just color this part, and this folding domain, as we call that, and this one is the other one, and what AlphaFold tells you here is it knows both rigid bodies very nicely, these globes, but it doesn't really know how they are linked to each other, can be any way. Yeah? Doesn't tell you how it is. But if you need to know for the function, you need to determine that. So this came out in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. And actually, after the second cast, they was very fast in publishing. And also, they gave us, for the first time, the source code and all the means to actually run the code. Before that, in 2020, they only gave us a meager paper, which is very bad. Thank you. So this went viral on Twitter, and it was the first time where science and Twitter really worked. So immediately, people found out that you can hack the network very nicely to do things which were not intended. You not only can predict individual domains, you can also predict domain complexes by just hacking it. I don't go into detail now, but here Minko did some very simple programming to just change how AlphaFold sees the sequences, and then it could also predict complexes. Yeah? And the next thing is, Google didn't thought about this, but Sergey Ovshinnikov thought about it, then just implement the whole thing in Colab. So you don't need to download the stuff, you can do it all in Colab by Google. So Colab Fold making proteins fold accessible. So you can go to GitHub, scrub to get to this GitHub folder, and just make your own predictions. And I actually wanted to do that, but I saw the time, so we just skip it now, and you can do it on your own. It's very easy. You just put in your protein sequence, and it goes very fast. So how does it change? How did it change structure biology? So mostly, if I do now structure biology, I still solve protein crystals experimentally because it is an experiment. It's a real world. It's not a prediction. And if I then compare it later on with my predictions, this is one which I solved relatively recently. And if I then compare the predictions with it, I have to admit, very often, it is pretty accurate. You see, I mean, the overlays are 100%. I mean, there's a little bit here. If this is your interesting part, then obviously it's nice, but most of the time it's not. Most of the time it's might be not. But sometimes it's actually more wrong. So this is another structure I solved last year with a colleague. I didn't tell their names because it's a little bit secret, so it's easier like this, and I don't have to all give you NDAs to not tell anyone about the structures. So this is the predicted structure, and then I solved it in a second, and it looks quite a little bit different. So this is the real structure, so the blue one. So it is recognizable, but it's different. Yeah? And if we morph it around, the videos are too small, too slow. Come on, turn around. You see, it's quite a bit of movement going on into the structure. Yeah? And sometimes, so this is my collagen, which we talked about, so you've seen this. So this is what AlphaFold thinks about the collagen looks like. It's a little bit mean because I didn't tell them all the stories, but this is how AlphaFold thinks this collagen looks like. It should look like this. It makes it like this. It knows it's bullshit. It says it's red, so it tells you that it's not correct. But for me, it looks like a little bit, probably some divine intervention into this. I don't know. But it's not yet there. So how can it be helpful? For experimentalists, it's very helpful because I didn't tell you the whole story. For crystallography, we have to use old knowledge to actually solve our structures. And we can do that now with using AlphaFold. And this is also how I solved this structure. So this is the one I just showed you. And I solved it. Oh, sorry. Ah, it's not working. I solved it by just using the red one and the blue one individually and just put them differently together, more or less, to make this long part simple. So I can use it, but I have to always think about it, what is really the problem. Then we have integrative model building. So people have this very, very low resolution of huge structures. So this is a nuclear pore complex at 7 angstrom. This is more or less the resolution we saw earlier with my blenders, which you couldn't really say if it's now making CBD oil or mortar. This is the resolution graph. Yeah? And if you now have those and you have all these high resolution predictions, you can up and now fit those because from the outside you could probably see the differences. So this is how it looks in real. So this is one of the major outputs that we can now make huge structures which we couldn't do before. So what can you not do? And this is the last couple of slides. So I'm probably going 3 minutes over or so, but I think we can live with that, hopefully. So what it can't do, it can unfortunately not predict the effects of single mutants. And this is very important, because this is now, again, our dog. And we had this dog, actually not in our lab, but we, a veterinarian came to us because this dog always had broken bones. And there was a single mutation in this protein. And this I just indicated here by this little mutation over here. And this obviously changed the protein quite a bit, but if I do it in AlphaFold, obviously this one mutation over this whole MSA, so this one change of image, it's just lost in the neural network. It just ignores it. So what it does, it just gives me the same structure again and just changes the amino acid. But obviously, if I would solve that, that would look completely different, because it is a deleterious mutation in the moment. So in the moment, we cannot predict effects of single mutations as proteins. Then normally what we wanted to do, we want to use this for docking. So normally we have proteins, we want to change whatever they do, and then we would dock small molecules to it, like viral stuff, whatever. And this is also not good enough in the moment. So AlphaFold cannot be used for that. So we have to do still experimental structures. And finally, you can never be sure, and this is my major problem. I'm a structural biologist because I want to know the truth. And the truth I only know when I have experimental evidence for it. And AlphaFold, it's very guys. It's a very nice and it's a major breakthrough, but obviously it is just a theory and it should be dealt with as a theory. And you have to do the experiments anyway to test if this theory is correct or not, as you always do in science. And this is now the major thing which goes through all the stuff. And I would just stop with this quote from Derek Lover, which is a columnist at Nature. Structural biology has been greatly advanced by these new tools, but it has not been outmoded, replaced, or rendered irrelevant. It's more relevant than ever, and now we get down to even bigger questions with it. And with that, I hope you enjoyed the talk, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you so very much, Jan. We have microphones in the room. There's one there, there's one there. I'm a little bit blind, but I think there's also one there and one there. Of course, our folded protein signal angels are monitoring for translations and mutations and all sorts of questions on the internets, in Matrix, in IRC, and in the Fediverse. We are in Zeus, so the hashtag is #37C3Zeus, or in the IRC room, 37C3 Hall Zeus. So let's start here in the front.
Hi, I'd like to thank you for your wonderful talk, and I'd like to ask if there's like any possibility to correct the predictions of AlphaFold, because you said a lot of times AlphaFold does like bullshit. You see on the first look, like, that cannot be the truth. So is there any possibility to use our knowledge of structural biology and combine that with AlphaFold to have like the ultra tool to use best of both?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I always need to be careful. AlphaFold is not making bullshit. In 99% of the cases, it is doing a very, very brilliant job, just to make that clear, or 95%. It's only a couple of times, which is getting pretty bad. So, and probably I've overbrought this point because it's so close to my heart that structural biology is not dead yet. So, but yeah, you can. You can use multiple other things. We can use NMR structure. We can use restraints from other stuff. We can change the multiple sequence alignment. So there's a whole field. I mean, I just recently, over Nicolaus Day, I was actually on a conference for 4 days, which just dealt with structural biology. So we are not at the end of this computational structure predictions. Yeah, this is just the beginning. AlphaFold made a huge step. And since then, we have evolved quite a bit. So the last cast, for example, AlphaFold didn't even go there. But many, many other programs did there, which did it in a similar way. So yeah, definitely yes, and it gets better every day.
So I can see that the internet has crystallized out a question.
The internet would like to know what your personal thoughts are on where this progress could be utilized in the field of medicine. Is this still far off, or is there already progress being made?
No, there's quite a bit of progress being made. I mean, it depends a little bit what you need your structures for. I mean, I told you about the docking, so this typical idea that you, for example, you have a target like an insulin receptor, and you now generate a new insulin which fits perfectly in this bound, in this pocket. This is, wow. Sorry. So this is probably not there in the moment. But if you need more broad, let's say, more row resolution structure, this is already going. And in the moment, I mean, I support or supervise many structure biologist projects and also some medical ones, and none of them are not using AlphaFold. It's not that you're not using it. It's always there. Yeah. And sometimes you need to have more data, and then you have to do experimental work as well. So yeah.
I see microphone 3 has been staring at the X-ray machine. Is there a question?
Yes. Thank you for the presentation. So my question is, if in the future maybe AlphaFold would be such good that it would be possible, like with omics technology, to combine it with interactomics to simulate whole organisms to answer scientific questions for that?
Yeah. Very good question. We are on the way already. I mean, there are groups, there are this minimal viable cell, which is it's not artificial, it's a cell which is so boiled down that it has very few proteins. And they already trying to simulate the whole cell organism, all the proteins on a physical way, and they use AlphaFold to get this parameterization of their model in that. Yeah. So we are on this way. If we are ever there, how should I know? I mean, if you have asked me 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, if there will be a neural network predicting protein structures, I would say no. So I don't know, probably. But we are doing that for years, and it has done now multiple steps forward. Yeah.
The collagens at microphone 1.
Yeah. Most of the proteins we know the structure of can be crystallized. How's your estimate regarding AlphaFold's performance to proteins which cannot be crystallized because they don't turn up in the training data as much?
I'm not sure how far you are aware about crystallization. I mean, in theory, all proteins who have a defined three-dimensional structure, which are not all, but we forget about them in the moment because this needs another talk. All of them can be crystallized. We haven't found the real, real conditions yet, potentially. That's at least the idea behind it. So I guess as long as there's a three-dimensional structure in this protein, a prediction method should be able to at some point predict it. If AlphaFold is doing the trick, or some other probably language models in the future, which also are there, nobody knows. But it's not seen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Could it be that the internet has distilled down the structure of another question?
The internet wants to know whether the structure of a protein can change during crystallization.
This is a mean question. Yeah, yes, of course it can. And some people say a crystal is so artificial we shouldn't actually consider it a protein structure. But I beg to differ. Yeah, it can do that, and we see these crystal artifacts, as we call them in the crystal structural community. But we have 200 whatever thousand crystal structures, and most of them are tested in many biochemical ways that they are correct. Because you can make hypothesis based on the structure, and you can test these in real life scenarios, like in cells or in vivo or in vitro or whatever. So yes, but most of the time it's not a problem. Sometimes it is. As always in biology, never 100% true.
So there's time left in our PhD for two small crystallizations or one big one. Microphone 4.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. So I was wondering, how do you get to the initial amino acids that you need to put into AlphaFold or need to crystallize? Because if you don't know what's there, how do you know how to purify that? Or
yeah, I mean, I get this question. It's a good one. But in principle, you're going the other way around. So normally you have a question, what is your scientific idea? What do you want to do? So you have an hypothesis. So I want to deal with cancer. Always, let's say, I want to deal with coronavirus. And then you know the coronavirus genome, and you know all the proteins in coronavirus because we have sequenced them. So we know the DNA, and I didn't put it here, sorry, but we know the DNA, and the DNA is directly translated to amino acids. So as long as you know the DNA, you know all the proteins. I didn't put this link, sorry, forgot that. I should have put it somewhere.
A very short question for microphone two.
Okay, just again to problematize this idea of a single folded structure. I know it emerged from the history of X-ray crystallography, but like in the human body, sometimes a protein can, say, malfold, or it can have multiple metastable configurations. So could we imagine AlphaGo and other technologies evolving to be a more dynamic thing, where we're seeing the evolution of the folding from when it's initially synthesized, the protein, and could we imagine new optical techniques that allow us to just double check that these crystal proteins are the same as these living proteins?
This is a very important point. Because, first of all, AlphaFold does not know how proteins are folded. AlphaFold just knows this is the sequence and this is how it should end up. But it has no real way how to fold it. So the physics behind the folding is completely unknown to AlphaFold, which is my major concern, because it just makes the beginning and the end. So in crystallography, we have very often different crystal forms of the same protein, so we know this variability sometimes. And my hope is, and now we go to the future, to the outlook, that at some point we have probably like a large language model of proteins, which actually understands how the protein folding is kind of happening, not like we come from A to B, but what is the different steps. And Meta, for example, the Facebook company, has done this. ESMFold is a large language model, but it's much, much less good than AlphaFold in the moment, and as far as I know, they actually dropped the development, so it probably will never be better. But someone is probably working on a large language model for proteins, and then we understand really the folding, the biophysics behind it, and not only this is how it looks like before, and this at the end, in the middle, is a black box.
Thank you, perfect.
So I have a Mastodon, and I have a DCT. You can find me. Yeah, if you have further questions, I'm on the conference tool. And
Jan, thank you so much. Let's put our hands together one final time.